You'd be hard-pressed to meet anyone who hears the names Big Bird, Elmo, Grover, Oscar the Grouch, and doesn't crack a smile as they remember their favorite characters from Sesame Street. But fans are likely to remember a number of real-life people just as fondly. And Sonia Manzano, better known as Maria, the owner of the Fix-It Shop, is definitely one of them. She retired this past June after 44 years on the show with 15 Emmy Awards for television writing. And she's also been recognized as one of the most influential Hispanic Americans in the United States. Now, Sonia Manzano has written her second book called Becoming Maria, a memoir of love and chaos in the South Bronx. It tells the story of her upbringing and the beginnings of a life spent making a difference for children. It is published by who's publishing this?
Scholastic.
a publisher that thinks a lot about kids. Sonia, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, your first book, The Revolution of Evelyn Serrano, is a novel. This book begins with some of your earliest memories and ends the moment before you begin working on Sesame Street. Do you plan to write another one?
Maybe. I have a couple ideas rumbling around in my head.
Not about your time on the show?
Yes, about my time on the show, but certainly more my personal view of my time on the show, but not less about the show and more about me.
Why did you feel that the story of this part of your life needed to be told?
Well, a bunch of reasons. The show started producing less segments while it expanded the cast, humans and puppets, and so there was less work to go around. I have a lot of creative energy, and I needed some place to put it, so I decided to put it in writing.
So when you first started and there was a need for people to do everything and you were writing and appearing on the show,
You
had a lot less time on you.
Yes, less so. And I love the form. I love the memoir form. I always have.
In thinking about the Puerto Rican neighborhood in the South Bronx that you grew up in, did you go back there to see whether it's changed much?
Well, since this book has been published, I've been back quite a few times with journalists, and it has. It's not there. It's barren. The Third Avenue used to be like Hester Street. In the Lower East Side, there were millions of people, and now there's nobody there.
Well, there used to be an L there, and when they knocked down the Third Avenue L in Manhattan, it actually created a boom on that street, but it didn't have the same effect when they knocked
it down
in the Bronx?
Not in the Bronx, thanks to Robert Moses, and he cut the Bronx up with the Cross Bronx Expressway and isolated those neighborhoods, and then they took the L down, and no one could get in or out. When I was there, I could be down on Orchard Street in like half an hour eating a caniche. if people can't move out of their neighborhoods if they need a car, I think it ghettoizes neighborhoods, and that's why these neighborhoods are empty now.
Chatham Square used to be so important because it was kind of a hub for that L.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of sadness in the stories that you tell about growing up, you managed to convey it through the eyes and mind of a child. Did working on Sesame Street give you insights in how to write it that way?
No, I think I was born with this sensibility of remembering everything that happened to me before I was 7 years old. It was a wondrous time for me. And I think Sesame Street had that sensibility as well. And that's a reason I was so drawn to the show.
Did your parents move here from Puerto Rico?
Yes, they came separately. They met in New York.
And that's
in
where
the
you
40s.
Were born.
Yes, I was born in New York.
John Oliver recently criticized members of the news media for referring to Puerto Ricans who've moved to the mainland as immigrants.
Right. We're not immigrants. We've been citizens since the Jones Act of 1921, as a matter of fact.
Your parents came here.
Yes.
You open the book with a story about your aunt and uncle moving to New York with their family, and you make it sound as though it was a kind of a thoughtless decision, something just on the spur of the moment. Was that typical?
Yes, I think that it makes me understand how desperate their situation was. I did a lot of research for Evelyn Serrano, and I read a lot about what was going on in Puerto Rico during the Depression. It makes Oliver Twist's childhood sound like a walk in the park. So they were very desperate people, and when somebody says, come on over, we've got a room for you, they came.
Well, right now, Puerto Rico is going through a rough economic time.
It sure is.
Have you been speaking to people about the desperate situation there today?
Actually, I don't have that much of a connection with folks in Puerto Rico anymore because they've passed on.
Much of your early years were defined by the abusive behavior of your father. What effect did that have on you?
Well, obviously, it put me in fight mode for a lot of my adult life, which I'm finally relaxing out of. I think that kids in that situation do get into a fight mode. But I was never the target. It was always my mother. It was seeing their relationship that was, I think, challenging.
Do you have any idea why he was so angry?
No, but I think that it must have come from the poverty that they went through in Puerto Rico, where children were abandoned, where children would hang around a house if they were thrown a crust of bread. I think living that harsh childhood makes you a harsh adult.
You write about a lethargy that came over you in your early years. Was that the result of what you were witnessing?
Yes.
Kind of distancing yourself from it all?
Yes. I slept all the time. And when I went to visit a teacher who knew me at that time, she was the one who said to me, "Boy, were you a depressed kid?" And I realized it in retrospect that I was. There was something to all of that sleeping I was doing.
And was that the teacher who asked you to ask your mother about her life?
No, Mr. Gitterman was the teacher who said told me that my mother should read to me. And my mother said, "We have no books." And the teacher said, "Ask her to tell you stories about her life." That was a wonderful teacher. He introduced me to Charlotte's Web.
But you got more than you bargained for when you asked your mother that. What did she say?
Oh, my goodness. She would tell me these horrible stories about her childhood and having to care for children who would fall through the holes in the wooden shacks they lived in and drown in the sewage that ran under the houses.
And after you were overwhelmed by that, you asked her to tell you a story that she'd made up off at the top of her head.
Right.
And
right.
Her response must have seemed overwhelming for a preteen to have to deal with.
Right. She said, "Well, there was a poor mother who lived in Crotona Park, and her husband beat her every day. But then her children grew up, and they saved her. Happy?" That was the end of that story. Well, so thanks, Ma.
But that must have stayed with you because you actually try to make that happen.
It did stay with me. So people should be aware of the clues that they give to children might be seriously picked up by them.
My guest is Sonia Manzano, who's written a memoir called Becoming Maria, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx. You got your mother to finally leave your father and divorce him.
Yes.
Then she kept on returning. Why do you think people return to abusive relationships?
I don't know. I think love is strange. I think there was some need in each of them that they fulfilled in each other. I have asked them as adults, and they have no satisfactory answer.
Your father as well? He couldn't tell you why he was always hitting you?
Well, you know, life stuff happens. She always wanted to do what she wanted. I love her. You know, and my mother's response was, "Well, I always thought that when you'd grow up, you'd understand." You don't. I mean, you gain perspective and you might understand, but it doesn't give you back your childhood.
But you do say that part of what awoke you from that aimlessness that we talked about was seeing the movie version of West Side Story.
Yes, that was quite a moment for me.
Did that also get you thinking about going into show business?
I think probably. I saw this movie that exalted my crummy-looking neighborhood. All of a sudden, the things that I had witnessed all my life looked beautiful on
and
screen.
And Rita Moreno as a role model.
As a role model. I mean, that was my mother. My mother was totally into, "Get the washing machine. This is important."
You applied to the High School of Performing Arts in Manhattan. That had to be a big step for a kid from the neighborhood you grew up in the Bronx.
Right. I didn't even know it existed. That was another teacher who wanted to pave the way for me, and he insisted that I...
He saw something in you?
Yeah, I guess so. And I was very happy with my ambitions of being a secretary. But when I got to performing arts, I realized how... provincial my upbringing had been and how I had a lousy elementary school education.
But you had to audition for it, so you must have had something.
I guess so. I just did whatever he told me to do, which I think was pretty crummy acting, but they still accepted me.
Well, despite the fact that it was a relatively diverse place, you say that it had very few Hispanic students. Why do you think that was?
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of kids in the inner city at that time didn't know about the school, I suppose.
And then you attended college at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Right. Were you just trying to get away?
I was. I wanted to get away from my family, number one. And number two, I needed to go to a school that accepted me on an audition because my grades were so lousy in high school. And Carnegie Mellon and Hofstra University were two universities that were accepting children, young people on auditions.
And it also had a theater program?
Yes. And it wasn't so much that I wanted to be an actor. It was more that I wanted to go to college. And society was on my side at that time, I might add.
But you were the first in your family. Were they shocked that you were going to Pittsburgh to go to school?
Yes, yes, they were.
In your junior year, you became involved in the original off-Broadway production of Godspell in New York. That suddenly must have been the turning point in your life.
It really was, because I realized that I could make people laugh, and that was so empowering.
You end the book with your audition for Sesame Street. Wasn't it an unusual audition process?
Yes. Compared to how people have to audition nowadays, it was unusual because John Stone, a creator of the show, made the decision all by himself. I went into an office and he told me to tell him a story, and I told him a nightmare I had as a kid, and he liked it, and the next thing I know, I was cast on the show. Nowadays, as you know, it takes 30 people to make the smallest decision about casting.
Everything's a committee, but yes. That probably also allowed you to find yourself and find your character.
Yes, they were very supportive of me. They were very clear that they wanted a real person.
Had you seen the show before you began to work on it?
Yes, I saw it at Carnegie Mellon University. I flipped. I saw it in the student union, and there was James Earl Jones reciting the alphabet. I thought it was a show that taught lip reading.
Had you... You thought it taught lip reading?
Yes, because he was very deliberate. A, B, C, as the letters flashed over his head. It was pretty weird.
Some people are critical of the deal with HBO. They argue that privileged children will get to see the show months before everyone else. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that the show has always reflected the times that it exists in. It came out of the 60s and it embraced the 60s and the feminism, and it embraced that too. And we're living in harsh times. They need the money. It would be wonderful if people could do work for kids and not have to worry about making a buck, but that's not the world we live in now.
It'll still be shown on
PBS station, and they still do outreach programs, and they're going to have the Arabic version of the show in the Middle East. And what other kids' show can boast that?
Weren't you married on Sesame Street?
Yes.
Maria married? But you married, it was a real marriage, your husband.
Well, I married my real husband before I married my TV husband. I fell in love and got married and was going to have a baby, and then Maria followed suit.
Uh-huh.
Her pregnancy was much easier than mine, I can tell you that.
Even though you don't talk about it in the book, how did the character Maria develop? Was it something that was in constant process?
Yes, constant process. They kept telling me, John Stone and Dulcie Singer kept saying to me, we want real people so that the kids in the Lower East Side and Latino kids can have somebody to relate to. They stress that. It's very hard to be yourself. It's easier to play a character.
And when did they ask you to start writing? Was that fairly early in the process?
That was 5 years into the show. I felt I was contributing as much as I could as an actor. They would ask my opinion on the Latino segments, and I would give my opinion, and they would implement them. So then I felt my work was validated, and then I started writing myself.
And others must have felt it was validated. You've won 15 Emmys.
Yes, yes. As part of the writing staff, it's been a great ride.
And now you've left. Who's going to fill your spot? Are they coming up with somebody else?
No one.
Else?
They cannot.
Can they ever be another?
There can never be another Maria. Impossible.
Well, but back to West Side Story with Maria, aren't we? I could just, after you leave, I can say I just met the girl named Maria.
That's right. That's right.
Meanwhile, we have the book, and you're going to, you said you think you're going to write another book?
I think I'm going to write another book, perhaps, and I like writing picture books. as well. They always take place in the Bronx. I have another one called The Miracle on 133rd Street with Simon & Schuster, which will be released in September.
So those are books for kids.
For kids.
Well, this is an adult book, a very adult book.
Yes, yes. It's,
and if you want to see Sonia, well, Sonia Mazzano will be speaking and signing books at La Casa Azul Bookstore on Saturday, September 12th at 3:30 p.m. And this book, which I think that subtitle, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx, tells a lot about your intentions here.
Yes, it's two things. It was misery and wonder at the same time.
Do you think in the end it made you a stronger person, a better person? I've always wondered, because I had a rough childhood, I always wondered whether I would have been a better person if I had been born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
I would have rather have taken an easier way, to tell you the truth, no matter what kind of person it may be. But I think we make the best of what we have.
I should also point out that Sonia will be throwing the first pitch at the Yankee game on Tuesday, September 8th. Her book, Becoming Maria, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx, is published by Scholastic Press. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you.